Welcome to The Dopest. I'm Zoe Brownstone. Each week I talk with the activists, entrepreneurs, and artists shaping the cannabis landscape. All right, so last week we thought we were going to have an episode this week about sexual lubricants that have THC in them and the benefits of using cannabis in sex. And we were very interested and excited for that interview. We didn't get to have it this week. I'm sorry. But instead, I was lucky enough to sit down with Courtney Totterash, who is the founder of God's Vagina, which is a zine focused on women and cannabis, using cannabis professionally, recreationally, the environment around that. It was a great conversation. I hope you enjoy. Hey, Courtney, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I'm so happy you're here with me tonight. I'm sitting down with Courtney Totterash, the founder, writer, discoverer.
The every woman.
In charge of God's Vagina. Not literally God's Vagina, unfortunately.
One day.
But the zine known as God's Vagina, which I was very, honored to be a part of your second issue. That was, very fun. We'll get to that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a great afternoon. But for those who haven't read God's Vagina, who don't know about it, give me your elevator pitch.
Yeah, it's essentially a zine, and we interview women and discuss their experiences with weed. I think the first issue was specifically just talking about how different identity politics influence the way that you would experience or get high. And interact with the drug, just generally weed at one time, kind of pre-legalization, pre this sort of prettying up and trying to make it more accessible, I think was really gendered and far more masculine. So we had discussions about that. The second issue more so was delving into the ways in which women are interacting on a more personal level with it, whether they're making art, working as doulas, and prescribing that to the pregnant individuals that they're working with, yourself, and all the work that you do, whether it be activism or comedy, and just getting a little deeper and taking men out of the equation almost entirely and just seeing what women are actually doing. That's rad and exciting.
Taking the lid off a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the first issue. I was really, I remember we had met and I read some of the interviews and I'd been working in the cannabis industry for about a year at that point. And I remember reading these interviews and being yeah, I've heard all this before, but this was me coming from somebody inside the industry. And it really struck me as very interesting to put that in the hands of maybe a professional woman in her 40s or 50s who'd never encountered a woman speaking out loud about her recreational experiences with cannabis. And that in and of itself is can be quite revolutionary depending on who you're giving it to. So was it a case of did you want to create a shock value when it came to this subject matter?
I don't think so. I feel with the name and all the connotations that come around with that, I think people do expect that. But it really was sort of a natural progression and allowing people to have a space to tell. Really, I'm always interested in very mundane stories that women have to tell. And that was kind of the thing where it's what do you do when you're sitting around your home? Those sort of smaller female narratives are what I really gravitate towards. And I guess that's what I was really highlighting. And when you talk about this sort of 40-year-old, 50-year-old woman, I really did find there was that generational divide because I did try to reach out and talk to older women. It ended up being very much, millennials that were featured in it. But that was really not for lack of trying, but I think they definitely were more open to talking about these things in a public platform, and there wasn't a stigma, and they maybe didn't really grow up with that strong of a stigma.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you find that before kind of compiling these conversations in the form of a book, did you find that you were having these conversations accidentally? It was coming up kind of out of nowhere. Was it in your workspace? Where were these kind of interactions happening?
I don't think I ever really did talk to women explicitly about that. I think, one of the common sort of threads that comes up in a lot of the conversations that I had with these girls formally for the publication was the idea of female gathering around weed. And I guess I had never thought about that, but that is a space where a lot of communal organizing or just like passing on ideas or what have you take place. But really, the seed of how it came about was me experiencing a really gendered situation with acquiring weed and a man sort of, I guess, using it against me and then just being high, smoking his weed and wondering, like, are other women feeling this way or are they going through this? And like, why at like my late 20s do I still feel like a teen girl that's like, you know, behind the school, I guess.
Can you take me a bit further into that? Like, what are you, I totally know what you're kind of what you're getting at, but
yeah.
Is it that vibe of like, I don't belong here? Is it, this doesn't feel as comfortable as it could be? Like, was it a social kind of pressure you were getting that you felt kind of maybe there are other women out there that feel the same kind of pressure?
I think it was a knowledge piece where everyone around me had this ownership of it, and but also it was just a sexualization of like me using it and trying to acquire it in various ways. You know, I mean, when I was younger and it was harder to get it, and you're essentially getting it from like older men.
Mm-hmm.
And even that continued into my like later years.
Mm-hmm.
And then what that means and what they expect in return, and just really weird sort of insidious, like pre-Me Too kind of like situations.
Wasn't,
you know,
that
what I
long
mean?
Ago.
No, exactly.
Think about the timeline. Yeah, do you think that the... I totally understand the sexualization behind and beside cannabis almost, where it's as if, you know, we look on social media platforms where so much is happening for women in cannabis in a positive way and in a negative way on something like Instagram, where we're seeing both, you know, women in illustration coming out with guides to using cannabis. It's like, who would have thought that that would exist 5 years ago? But we're also seeing this like influx of, you know, women wearing bikinis, selling a bong. And it's like, wow, have we come far at all? Or are we just like diverting into a million different weird niches or kind of alt scenes? Do you think that there is like a hypersexualization of cannabis and women in a negative light as well as a positive light? Or to you, is the distinction quite like simpler, much more simpler than that?
I do think we're diverting into a bunch of different niches. And there's kind of the old sort of like High Times model, like head shop that still needs to be served. I don't think that can just go away. I think the feminization of it too is... a little cheap and problematic, you know what I mean? Because at the end of the day, I'm going to question capitalism in any sort of way. And like, what are you trying to sell to me? And do you actually care about me in any sort of way? No, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say like an alt sort of scene, like I'm waiting for those to actually bubble up again, because I think now we are seeing all of this normalization. And like, hopefully there is like a left to the center that we can like us weirdos can gravitate towards. Because even like a lot of the stuff in God's Vagina, like, you know, when the first issue came out was a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say subversive, but like you said, to a certain demographic or a certain like scene of people might have been seen as such. And I really don't think something with flowers and pink on it that selling weed is, you know, so unheard of now. It's very commonplace.
Yeah, it is very common.
And, you know, as I continue to do work like this, hopefully I can continue to look critically at like what I'm putting out there and adjust based on like what I'm seeing.
What was the what would you say was the general feedback after your first release? Were people, I picture outrage, like I picture some sort of outrage coming from a demographic. I mean, yes, we have progressed since the 50s, but it's still kind of, some would say, like a pretty daring act to put something like this into publication.
I don't think I ever experienced any outrage, but I do find that I get a lot of like jokey sort of like, oh, like women, sisters doing it for themselves sort of thing, which I think like underneath
people not taking
that
it seriously
is like a little bit of outrage or being uncomfortable with it. And instead they sort of make it like, you know, a joke.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was, I remember like coming in to do the interview for the second issue.
I have very fond memories of that.
It was a great day. Like I was really stressful. I know that like I was doing the interview with my then one of the co-founders of Shweed, which was like funny because it was like an experience of like smoking weed and being stressed out, which is like a really funny combination.
Yeah.
But even in the act of doing the interview, it was like, And I didn't realize this until afterwards. Both the interview itself and the day surrounding the interview was an experiment in this industry that a lot of like people are afraid of and not willing to broach, which is like that line between having a good time and being social and smoking cannabis and trying to be professional. And I come up against it a lot, and I see a lot of people like ignoring behavior and excusing their behavior because of their cannabis use. And I mean, I can only take care of myself in this situation, but like, did you find through the process of making either of the issues that it was like, who's professional, who's getting high? Does it matter? Is there a distinction? Like, is that something that you face as an author?
Yeah, I mean, observing you that day, because I think that was like definitely a struggle for you, because that I think reflected like wider projects that you were involved in, and maybe was a sign of a professional relationship in general. I think I've been lucky because it is an independently run publication. Like, I'm really the only one with any investment in it. So it can be relatively unprofessional. And really, I go into it kind of hoping that I can hang out with a bunch of women. Like, I really use it as an excuse to have, like, good times with people. I had a great time with you that day. But I think that was maybe the only person who was, like, standing me up, like, very late. Mm.
All right.
Everyone else was a very functional stoner. Oh, no. For sure, yeah.
That's at the heart of the question. Speaking of being a functional stoner, do you find that in your professional life, is it a part of your professional life? Do you feel comfortable talking about that? I mean, I know I'm putting you kind of in the hot seat, but in terms of like your, you know, you ask those questions to the people that you interview, for you personally, like, what is this life with cannabis? What is that experience like for you?
I'm really comfortable, I think, in general to talk. Like, I do work in a professional office space. I work in book publishing, which is often sort of considered like a square like industry, maybe. And I don't really have any problem being very open about whatever I do, including my cannabis usage. I mean, it probably does help that it was, you know, going to be legal very, very soon, right? So I think that almost kind of created like a space where people could explore it. But I would publicly talk about it in the office, and there still were some, you know, older, more professional gentlemen that I think it made uncomfortable, but yeah. That's okay.
I am curious about like the office space and cannabis use. I think it's like the next few years we're going to see a big, not a big shift, but perhaps like cracks in the system where it's not necessarily everyone starts like smoking up, but it's like there's less of a stigma and less taboo around it. I think that like, you know, zines like God's Vagina are starting to like open the door for this kind of conversation where it's no longer like a secret that I'm using cannabis recreationally, but it's almost just like, I'd rather have the conversation than be accused of something.
Yeah, absolutely. Get ahead of the game on that, really. And, you know, I know that I'm not doing anything wrong, or I'm not doing it at work, or it's not affecting my performance, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's totally fine. I mean, I'm pretty just comfortable with whatever I do, I think.
That's groovy. I wanted to ask you about the second issue again. What did you find surprising the second time around? Any interviews where you were like, huh, I didn't think that was going to happen, or any conversations you had where you were kind of taken aback?
No, I think I'm pretty game for everything. And I try to cultivate a space where, you know, I'm not going to really inject it with sort of shock value. Like, I want them to be comfortable to share whatever they want and don't want to, I guess, react like over the top in any sort of way. I have like conversations in that issue that I'm really proud of, because I think we touch upon things that don't often get discussed.
Like what?
I interviewed my trans friend Eleanor, and she discussed usage of cannabis in regards to transitioning and dealing with the hormones and medication that you would use, and even just, you know, through the process of kind of coming to terms with living as yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that's often not talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. Layers of stigma.
Yeah, for sure.
Can't imagine. I shudder to think of the challenges of self-publishing, added to the fact that you're discussing a subject that for many people in the industry is still considered taboo. What did you find was like the kind of the greatest hurdle in getting your book out there?
Yeah, I think it's still hard to find retail avenues for it. I'm not necessarily sure where it fits at all times. It's worked in dispensaries like 1066. I've tried it in clothing stores. It's gone pretty well, but I think it really depends on the vibe of that place and kind of what they're, I guess, projecting with their persona. Wellness stores I've tried. So it's just like, it is niche, and I don't know what that niche is yet.
Interesting. It's almost, of course, like dispensaries make sense because it's a cannabis book.
And yeah,
like,
they're already in there. They can, you know.
For sure.
Yeah.
Makes sense. But it kind of, for me, goes beyond that. Like there, I think, are other avenues that, you know, women are looking to access this kind of information and sort of help them figure out their own journeys, perhaps, or tell their own stories. I think you should contact the OCS and see if they're interested in carrying your book online. I think it'd be a really added bonus. What are you thinking in terms of issue three?
Right now, we're not really focusing on a physical third issue and more so trying to think of it as an ongoing event series.
Oh.
Because I think one of the things that at least I felt a little disconnected from was once these conversations were done, I didn't get to continue to have a conversation about that content and kind of see like where it sort of like, you know, grows out and like spreads out. So just having like live events that are essentially like these dialogues. So women that are specializing in something or maybe have like really unique experiences with weed and using that as more of a platform for the publication.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What kind of events are you thinking?
Well, one of the ones that we've been developing is this idea of, you know, living with partners or family members that maybe struggle with addiction and substance usage and like what that means now for this like current landscape that we're living in. Yeah, I think I've been going to Women in Weed events for quite a while now as a result of the magazine, and a lot of it is very similar, or they're reiterating a lot of the same information. So I just want to make sure that I'm continuing to like put out challenging conversations, I guess, and like less clean, like less sort of pretty and attractive. And again, trying to find that left of center that like maybe we all came to weed in the first place to try to find. And now we're a little bit lost, you know? And I think, you know, that's going to lie with people that aren't big business.
It's true. I think that especially in Ontario, we're almost in like a limbo period right now because we haven't really entered full retail here. We only have online legal sales. And I think people are anticipating a big boom in April when we see bricks and mortar stores in the province. I think other people are really hesitant about it because they think like, I mean, this lottery system was kind of nonsense. And currently the only place you can buy legal cannabis is from the OCS or from a licensed producer, but like getting to them is you still have to jump through a lot of hoops. So there's huge issues of accessibility. And I think more and more people want to have, if not real like stores for accessibility, at least like environments and communities that can provide information, advice. You know, you talked about, I kind of want to hear a little bit more about doulas, because you talked about doulas prescribing cannabis, but they don't have a medical degree. So what, when you talk about that, when you talk about women providing cannabis to other women, do you mean it on in a medical sense, in a holistic sense? Where is that kind of, is there a line for you? Was there a line during the process of interviewing these women?
Yeah, for that specific interview, it was a holistic sense. So she very much, you know, used it personally for ritual. And then it was just a sort of natural approach to birthing that, you know, I found fascinating and also very challenging. And I think a lot of those conversations angered people, I guess, going back to like that.
I'm sure they did. And I don't fall on either side. But I think the fact that people are discussing this and it's being experimented with and tried shouldn't be like quieted. Like that is something that people should have access to. Like whether you agree with it or not, it should be a broader conversation.
Yeah.
Do you see like these events being more of a collaborative like conversation, like an ongoing conversation? I personally would love to see a third issue of the magazine. I think that it has serious
Thank
legs.
You.
Do you think that maybe it'll live kind of in an online type of environment to go to party with these events?
Yeah, I think it's hard to sustain on my own, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That sort of breaks my heart, I guess. But yeah, I think seeing where these events go and creating content through that, be it, you know, audio of the interviews or, you know, blog posts and getting, you know, commissioning the participants to write pieces on a platform, something like that. Yeah. I don't think I've thought that through, but I do just want to be like in a room with women again talking about it.
Yeah.
You know,
the name is great. The event God's Vagina. Like, it works as a magazine and also as an event name. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I don't think so.
Excellent. Thank you so much for sitting down with me.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Courtney Totterash. Very excited to see what she comes up with next. I think this event series is a great initiative to help move forward this kind of breaking down of taboo and barriers that women face in this industry, both like as cannabis users and I speak personally as somebody who works in this industry. It's important that women support each other and continue to reach out and create these networks, because they won't exist kind of out of nowhere. We have to be active parts of this community. So very excited to see what she comes up with next. Next week, we have a great episode. I have a chat with a canna mom, a mother who used cannabis during her pregnancy, uses cannabis as a young mother, I should say as a mother with young children, and sort of the pros and cons of that and what that looks like. You know, talking about stigma, this is another huge area for women to overcome, to learn about, to self-educate about. I think that as we become more aware of what is available to us as cannabis users, this dialogue should be open. Whether you agree with it or not, it's important to listen to what women who have experienced this have to say. So I'm very excited to sit down and have that conversation. If you like what you're hearing, reach out to us. Let us know. We're on Instagram at The Dopist. That's at @THEDOPIS. ST. Would love to hear from you. We're also on Twitter now. Very exciting week for us at The Dopist. We're at TDopist. That's at TDOPIST. Check us out. Send us a tweet. We'd love to hear from you. And hey, if you're enjoying the podcast, remember your cannabis etiquette and puff puff pass this podcast on to a friend. The Dopist is a production of Weedbox. Produced and edited by Noah Snyderman of Voice Magic. Original music by John Mavrow. The show is researched and edited by myself, Zoe Brownstone, and Noah Snyderman. You can find us on Instagram at The Dopist. That's at THEDOPIST. Until then, we'll be back next week.